Way down south, down a long dusty road, there's an old ramshackle house that nobody lives in anymore. And if you walk down the hall and look, you'll see an old grandfather's clock that don't run anymore. It's silent now and it's covered up with spider webs. That was my grandfather's clock, and this song is a story of that clock. My grandfather's clock was too large for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, though it weighed not a penny weight more. It was bought on the morn of the day that he was born, and was always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died.
To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our Chupacabra hotline is 818-817-0021 in case you've seen one of these things. 818-817-0021. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, Scott Corrales, and your phone calls. Scott, of everything you've investigated, the UFOs, the chupacabras, which fascinates you the most?
That's a very good question. I don't have favorites. I would have to think the chupacabras is the one that's been the most thoroughly looked into by me. Certainly, I've been able to keep on top of it for the past 10 years, now it's a little manifestations. Every time there's the smallest report of mutilations, I go ahead and post it to the internet. In fact, the most recent was just this week in Chile, again, involving, you know, the traditional, the boilerplate exsanguination of chickens from their chicken coop, the befuddled witnesses, the confused authorities. So we just keep documenting until we, you know, see where this leads us to the next manifestation. Hopefully.
Whatever it is, there aren't too many of them, right?
Well, if we count all the multiple sightings, there should be enough to maintain some kind of... they can replenish themselves. We don't know how long they live if they're biological creatures. But one of the main things of those Chilean sightings was the alleged destruction of one of those chupacabras nests by a bomber or a fighter of the Chilean Air Force. Now, of course, the military was saying, we just use that area for practice. There's no one out there. These are all old abandoned mines. Remember, Chile is one of the world's top copper-producing countries. And these are just abandoned mine shaft, open-air mines, and apparently they were being used by the chupacabras creatures as habitats.
What did they do, blow it up?
They blew it up. This would have probably been in April of 2000.
And what was in there stayed in there, I guess.
Whatever.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show. And where are you calling from?
I live in San Antonio, Texas. My name is Malia.
Hello.
And I drive through Texas. And I'm very, I don't know, I guess, kind of looping it together, I guess, a bit. I listen to you. You and Scott quote from the Bible, and then things are in South America, and being from Texas in 15 years, and knowing about the Mayan
I'm going to have to let you go, dear. You got a bad connection. I'm sorry. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Scott. This is Gavin. Yeah, I'm a truck driver, and I've been driving for about 13 years. And back from about 1995 to 97, I had a dedicated run from Wisconsin down to El Paso. And I'll never forget this. I was south of Santa Rosa on Highway 54, south of a little town called Corona. It was right between Corona and Ancho on Highway 54 in the Cibola National Forest. I came up over a hill on that highway one night, and there stood this little three-foot creature with the biggest, brightest red eyes, and they were like the horizontal eyes. You know, but they were bright, beaming red, and this thing was on 2 feet. It wasn't on all fours like a fox would be or something like that. And it turned back and looked at me, and I was probably doing 65 miles an hour, came up over the hill, and where your headlights finally catch the road when you come up over the hill, there this thing stood and stared at me. And it ran off the highway, and just about when it got off into the sagebrush or whatever kind of foliage was there, it leaped and jumped and like it flew, and it bolted right out into the woods, and it was gone. And I had just, you know, goosebumps up and down my spine. My doors were locked, and I kept going. It was about probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'll never forget it. And tonight, listening to you on Coast to Coast reminded me of this, and learning about, you know, chupacabras now, it's a very real thing, I will say that.
Well, it just goes to show you what you saw, Alan, does seem to answer to those characteristics of the running, leap, jump, and flight that chupacabras reputedly is able to do. It does seem to me that the creature could have been seen elsewhere, stateside, aside from the places we know it to have been, like in Arizona and California, certainly.
What are the possibilities of genetic manipulation, scientists playing around, and they either made them intentionally or accidentally?
Well, remember back when that famous photo in Time magazine came out showing the mouse with a human ear growing out of its back? People were astonished because they had no idea that our genetic engineering capabilities had quite reached that level of sophistication. This week, we have that story all over the internet about the controversy of using human and animal genes for medical purposes.
Yep.
So this is always what actually reaches the public. What's going on behind the scenes? What are they not doing? I remember stories of in the old Frank Edwards books, of stuff the Japanese were getting up to during World War II, allegedly implanting gills in humans, things to that effect. I'm not sure if those experiments ever worked, I mean, certainly. But it's very possible that if chupacabras is a genetic experiment, it would have been created with a definite purpose, and it seems to me that it would be some kind of weapon.
Are you familiar at all with the work of the Puerto Rican journalist Jorge Martin? He writes that it's possible a chupacabra has been killed. Blood tests were done on the creature, and it revealed that the blood is no way compatible with human blood at all, and that though the results continue to be not really conclusive, it's not known of any animal species to date.
Right. Blood samples that Jorge was referring to are the ones that he obtained and which were sent off to a lab in Switzerland, I believe. They found high levels of chlorophyll in the blood, and they said the levels of magnesium and calcium were just way off the charts. But then again, you have the possibility that was blood regurgitated from an animal that the chupacabras had attacked, and not the actual, let's say, vital fluid of the chupacabras itself.
Let's go to the chupacabra hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, am I on?
Yes, you are, dear.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know if I was or not. I lived in Arizona. Okay, I lived on a cliff. I was 26 miles out of Sholo and 16 miles before you get to Contro, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I started noticing things were happening on my property. Okay, I would have flattened rabbits coming up, totally drained of everything. I mean, just totally flat. And it was, you know, it was kind of spooky that I would live by myself. Okay, I was outside one day, and I looked to my right out towards the, I would guess, you know, out in the wood, the wooded area of the place, and I saw something staring at me, and what caught my attention, it was two big eyes staring at me. Okay, we had a lot of problems after that, and I did also. I was scared to death even to live on the property by myself. I worked at night, so I'd drive my car right up to my front door, practically, just to get into the house, because it used my property. I had over an acre there on top of that cliff, and I could actually, you know, it would come up to the property because I could see it. I'm kind of scared. I'm scared just thinking about it again.
I don't blame you.
But, yeah. But anyway, even up there, we had a lot of problems. We had one 13-year-old girl that was chased by it. She thought it was, what had happened, they were walking home real late, and they shouldn't have been because it was so far and isolated in the mountains. There was no street lights. And she had told me that what it looked like was almost like it had a lion's head. She said also that the arms projected out of it, and she said it was actually about 7 foot tall, and that was on all fours.
Okay? That's pretty cool.
Wow.
That's huge.
That's
big. It was staring at me. I was in my living room, and I felt like something was staring at me. I opened the living room windows, and I saw these big, huge, glowing red eyes staring at me. And,
this sounds more like Mothman.
I was going to say, now you've moved away from Chupacabras into another area, certainly.
No, this is what I... The
it's
real,
too big.
The reason I'm telling you this is because I actually did see it in flight. And to me, it looked more like a pterodactyl.
Oh.
Uh-huh, and another person on the mountain has actually seen it also. And
wow.
She described it as a pterodactyl.
It was that big.
It was that big. I had a tree that was 12. When I looked out the living room window, when I felt like something was looking at me, my tree was 12 foot tall. This thing was looking at me over my tree.
Oh, my God.
And what I saw flying was huge. I mean huge.
Big
it looked like it had bat wings.
And big claws?
You know, it was behind a tree, and I actually didn't get to see it at that time, but I did see it in flight.
You know, this, I think George is absolutely right. It's more like Mothman, perhaps some gargoyle kind of creature.
Okay.
Well,
it's still, I had the flattened rabbits in my yard, and I had one dog that was totally mutilated, just sort of pieces that looked like giant turkey tracks.
Well,
I could describe it.
As I said, when we were doing in the Chilean aspect of the Chupacabras, the first entities seen were not the ones that we've come to associate with the creature, but the larger ape-like winged phenomenon. And maybe this could be some kind of manifestation of that.
I don't know. I had a lot of neighbors that were having problems. One was that it was actually trying to get into their home. It killed two of their cats. It also killed one of their dogs. And we were just really having a hard time up there with this. It was chasing that little girl. She said that the arms stretched out as it was coming towards her, and that the eyes turned from red to yellow.
Oh, you wanted to pick her up and take her up to
It scared her. Yeah, she was hysterical by the time she got home. Her mother couldn't even talk to her. She just kept screaming. And she was just hysterical over it. But I had to endure it because it was using my property to go through.
No pictures?
No, if I'd had a camera, I'd be rich right now. It was in flight, and I swear it looked just like a prehistoric pterodactyl.
Well, is it possible, and thanks for the call, is it possible, Scott, that it might have been a pterodactyl?
Well, certainly. We get reports of pterodactyls every year, certainly, both North and South America. But I'm not sure if that area would be perhaps... where one would associate that kind of habitat for pterodactyl. I mean, really, it's when you start looking at these reports of winged weirdos, which I think there's no better way of describing them, they seem to happen on a once-off. They appear, manifest themselves, terrorize witnesses, and are never seen again. But this one that the caller just mentioned appears to have developed a little stocking area for itself.
Yes.
And had access to all its needs right there. And was now changing its diet from animals to humans, maybe. You never know. Let's hope we never find out.
I've got a fast blast here for you that from Indianapolis, Indiana. If you want to contact a reporter named Russ McWade at Fox 59 Television in Indianapolis, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they say a chupacabra was caught and killed by a local man during a trip to the Gulf of Mexico 8 years ago. He has it on display at his local tavern.
Well, now that is one for the book. Certainly,
you got to check that one out.
There'll be a beeline of researchers going down his way.
And you know what, Lex?
Let me find out.
There's an assignment for you too. Contact the reporter at Fox 59, and let's see if we can get a picture of this on our website, and you follow up with that too, Scott. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Maybe it did happen. You never know. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I've got a question, maybe a hypothesis. And I heard the term Scott was using as gargoyle. I'm just wondering if the chupacabra, as we know them in Hispanic, aren't the same as gargoyles of old England, that, you know, they're basically bloodline related.
Well, theoretically, there are no gargoyles, but it's just the catch-all term that one uses to describe these things. If there's any relation, tradition-wise, I really wouldn't know. But the fact remains that we have seen throughout Central and South America creatures that would resemble what we understand to be gargoyles. They're not chupacabras. They're taller. They have the red eyes. They're winged. More often described as ape-like than anything else.
What if chupacabras are baby mothmen? They just haven't grown up yet.
Well, that's certainly
another possibility.
Let's throw that one into the pot.
Absolutely. Let's go west of the Rockies. Your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello. My name's Dan. I'm calling from Modesto, California.
Hey, hello, Dan. Go ahead.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Dan.
I think a lot of times why we don't get the picture proof, the bones and everything else, as if it is found and it's turned into the authorities, I think it's automatically taken away from us ever seeing it again. What do you think about that?
Well, I've always said that no proof will ever convince a skeptic. There's no amount of... If someone showed up with the chupacabras, automatically say, well, it's some kind of forgery, some clever monster maker has come up with this. Nowadays, photos are completely worthless with the leaps and bounds we're making in digital technology. There will come the time where you cannot distinguish a real photograph from a hoax one, certainly.
Right.
I think we're there already, in fact.
Right. Well, just the Bigfoots and the Loch Ness and everything else that I would like to believe in, because I do have an open mind, you would think somewhere along the lines, especially with everyone camping and pretty much all of the territory being trampled on, that you would find some bone or something. And I was just thinking maybe if somebody did and you took it to the authorities, maybe they didn't even know what to do with it, or it got discarded and put somewhere. So a lot of times people that don't have an open mind maybe need to leave a little option that possibly you never get to see it.
Well, let me tell you, here in Pennsylvania, a gentleman found a Bigfoot print on his property. He cut out the entire piece of sod where the print was, put the whole clump of sod into a briefcase, took it down to the University of Pittsburgh to see if someone there would just kindly take a look and tell him what it was. Not a single person in the department would even look.
There you go.
So it goes to show you.
There you go. Closed-minded people. Well, I thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for your program, George, and have a good day.
Thank you. We are still going to continue with phone calls, but Scott, your books, where do you get them?
Well, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries you can get from directly from Greenleaf Press at their website or from Amazon.com. The other books are monographs that are currently, unfortunately, out of print, but perhaps Arcturus Books, that's rgerard321 at AOL.com, might be able to help you out.
All right, but the Chupacabras and Other Mysteries in print?
Is in print, yes.
Amazon.com as well. If anybody needs to email me, it's simply george@coasttocoastam.com. A couple ways to get to the website, coast2to, you have to have that, coasttocoastam.com, or just georgenorrie.com, and that'll get you straight to the coasttocoastam.com website. Our next program, by the way, will originate, as I mentioned, live from Austin, Texas. My guest will be none other than Alex Jones for the program. We'll open up the phone lines a little bit later on. But for now, we've still got a half hour to go, and we'll open up the phone lines for you and continue talking with Scott Corrales about some UFOs around Mexico and Puerto Rico, and then the case of the very elusive Chupacabras.
This part of the show, listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, director M. Night Shyamalan must have copied the Chupacabra for some of the creatures in his movie, The Village. They look pretty darn close and eerie, I'll tell you that. Hey, the After Dark CD is the only CD I will ever do, and it is available to you. You get two and a half hours worth of bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, classic ghost stories. If you want to listen to a blip of one of them, it's the Monkey's Paw. It's on the coasttocoastam.com website. AfterDarkCD.com. You can go to the website that way or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. 1-800-598-2331. And welcome back. Final segment with Scott Corrales and your phone calls. Do you go on any Chupacabra expeditions or anything like that, Scott?
Not since the early days. No, I haven't. Certainly, the problem with, for example, having gone to Chile, which I never do, I think only from the States, only Dr. Virgilio Sanchez went down to Chile. There's a distance involved. There's a problem that once you get to the high desert, you're talking about incredible altitude. So you have to worry about altitude sickness and things to that effect.
Sure, you got
to
be ready for it.
Exactly, and I'm, you know, woefully unprepared that in that regard.
You live in the States now, right?
Yes, I do, yes.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Joe from St. Louis.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Hi. I got a book here, and it mentions the name Conga Mato, or the Jersey Devil. And it says, you know, one of the witnesses of this thing says it had some sort of a hypnotic grasp upon him. And that it had a good sense of feeling, as if though, you know, it was aware of the person's feelings. And it says that there's well documented phenomena and sightings of identified flying objects. I think that, you know, I mean, this thing has something to do with them putting this thing down as if to raise fear inside man. What do you think about this thing being, you know, I mean, the Jersey Devil?
Well, that was brought up from the very beginning, I think, in the early years. Comparisons were made to the appearance, to the red eyes. This is the first time I'd heard about the hypnotic aspect of the New Jersey Devil. But the fact that the entity could feel or would respond to feeling was brought up in Puerto Rico during one case, in which a woman had the creature land on her rooftop, on her porch, actually, and then hide behind a washing machine. The woman looked at it and said, she never said it, she just thought it. She thought, if you are the famous Chupacabras, you're the sorriest-looking creature I've ever seen. And the Chupacabras, or whatever it was, simply covered its face with a skinny arm, as though its feelings had been hurt.
Oh, my gosh.
So not only can it, you know, perhaps read your feelings, but it can also respond to them. I mean, you know, it's so strange.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you being part of the show. So there might be some intelligence behind them, Scott.
Absolutely. Or perhaps, if not intelligence, some kind of mimicry of human behavior. Which again, as suggested by the psychometrists when they looked at the photographs, or when they felt the photographs, rather, there was great intelligence and great malice at the same time.
Let's go to our Chupacabra hotline. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there.
Yes, sir.
Eddie from Miami.
Hello, Eddie. Go ahead.
Hi, Scott. Maybe you don't know me, maybe you do, and George, I really appreciate it. Let me on the line. I'm a reporter from Puerto Rico, and my name, maybe you do know, Scott. I work for El Bolsero newspaper in Puerto Rico.
Okay, yes.
And I've been reporting a lot of things about the Chupacabra for many years. Of course, most of my material was confiscated by the FBI.
Right.
And I was supposed to be not talking on the phone. But most of the stuff that you're saying and what everybody has been looking in, what happened in Puerto Rico many years, everything is true, and we keep investigating and stuff like that. I remember when you remember the mayor of Caranavanas, they call him Chemos Jones.
Yeah, Chemos Soto, that's right.
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of investigation in between the Junque, Caranavanas, Caguas, all about the Chupacabras. And I'll tell you the truth, I never seen a cow on top of a tree sucked out all its blood and everything. And I had other experience and I did have photos about the fence that was picked up. The force of this creature has in him. And it all happened after Hurricane Hugo. Everything came out. Apparently, it was like an experiment, maybe from the Seva base, naval base out of Sabah. But most of the stuff, everything has that you have said, it is true, and I do know that there's a lot of stuff that right now I just cannot say because I had an agreement after I had to move out. Now I'm living in Florida.
Why is it so secretive, Eddie?
The secret about this is sort of like things happened when the Boy Scouts were found and the lady was attacked in Fajardo from this Chupacabra, the creature that was claimed that was seen by, it was saw by Marilyn over in Canoanas. There are a lot of things, a lot of evidence, even Jorge Martin knows all about it, and other, the Dr. Rivera from Cataño Bayamón. A lot of evidence that we had that it was just, like they say, it was like a fairy tale for the public. Newspaper was actually publishing things that they say was not true and stuff like that. And then I had a bad experience with the lady with the attack. After a while, I had to actually drop off a little bit in my investigations. But I did have a lot of experience with this. We were in Caguas once. We went into some caves, and actually, we were just about a couple of feet away when this very smell that was so almost intoxicated us. We were completely like in another world. We had a feeling of this smell with all this kind of things going around. And the civil defense that was with us, a couple of the police that were with us, we had all the same kind of feeling. What it was sort of from this creature that it was out of the out of nowhere. We don't know exactly where it was, but we do know that the Chupacabra does exist. And where the name really actually came from, I have the name of the person when he started to writing about this. His name is Roberto Garcia Lopez. Mm-hmm. And he was the person that actually, with Pedro Julio Burgos, was the person that started bringing in all the information, and I kept on following up with them. And from there on, you know, the rest of the story about the whole thing about Scott is saying.
Well, Scott, let me ask you this. Is it unusual that he would be raided and they take his papers?
Not at all. This happened to another reporter from El Vocero that I'm sure Eddie knows. He was reporting strictly on the UFO aspect of things in the early 90s. And the gentleman...
Do you know Eddie? Do you know him?
I think Eddie's last name, if it is,
well,
but I think it is. I do know him.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to just ask him, I know he's probably off the air already, that his newspaper, El Vocero, changed ownership, and its owner was a... I guess he was some kind of... evangelical Christian of some sort, and he refused to have another story about UFOs or the paranormal written in his paper. And yet, El Vocero, even though it's a tabloid, was the only newspaper that kept people informed throughout the Chupacabras wave of every single case on the island. And prior to that, all of the UFO cases. The other island newspapers, even though things were happening right there, would wait for something to appear on AP or on IFE, the Spanish Newswire, before they included it in the paper.
And even
they
then,
wanted distance from the story.
They wanted just a complete change.
Absolutely.
Huh. All right, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, this is Eric from Minneapolis. It's an honor to talk to you both. You've mentioned the UFO connection, where the UFOs are frequent in that area, or what have you, whatever you want to call them. And you've mentioned genetic engineering. I wonder if you considered a marriage of kind of the two theories, where maybe these extraterrestrials or extra-dimensional entities, or whatever you want to call them, maybe unleashed something, or, you know, genetically engineered something that might account for the varying in appearances, you know, the multiple incarnations, that might also account for, like, the intelligence, and maybe that's why they never found bodies. Maybe they're smart enough to bury their dead that way, something like that.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. It was a very appealing one when the phenomenon first started, to wed chupacabras to the UFO phenomenon. In fact, I think that one of the very first things written was that chupacabras had somehow been left behind by extraterrestrials, or that it had escaped from someone's vehicle, something to that effect. Then there was another story circulating at the time about chupacabras having originally been found in out west somewhere, New Mexico, Arizona, and then taken to Puerto Rico and released in order to, I guess, have them breed in the controlled environment of an island. But, I mean, these stories all circulated, I think, within the first couple of months of the cases. And remember that the atmosphere was already saturated with UFO stuff for the past 7 or 8 years, and it was happening right smack dab in the middle of all the Roswell controversy, the controversy over the alien autopsy. So trying to give it some kind of alien
spin
was not out of the question.
I see. Okay. Well, I just wanted to see if you considered anything like that.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Clock's ticking. We'll grab a few more calls. Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you. What a nice way to spend an insomniac evening.
Thinking of creatures.
Scott, hello. I want to just throw out a hypothesis here, if I might. You said that often the chupacabra-type creatures are preceded by the winged-type creatures in a phase. And then also I believe it was said that the organs were shriveled, that the animals were bloodless, or that the organs were dissolved. Might one, if you're going to guess that this possibly could be an insect-type being, mightn't they be the same thing but in different stages?
That is an interesting consideration, except that stages, to my mind, would go from smaller to larger, not necessarily. But the winged creatures are always larger, and I guess the end result in this case would be the smaller chupacabras version.
Like a maggot is smaller than the fly.
Right, right, absolutely.
You know, so if the chupacabra were a smaller creature, then the moth-type creature would be the adult stage.
Right, but it works backward. The larger creatures appear first, and then you get chupacabras. The larger creatures are the winged simians, the gargoyle-like creatures.
Which could lay eggs, which then later become the chupacabra.
That's absolutely possible, certainly. That's absolutely true.
So
anything's possible at this stage.
I've seen a lot of strange things in my life. This is one which I haven't and which I hope not to. But great show, guys.
All right,
great
thanks.
Show.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you being on the show. It's kind of frightening to think of these things as huge insects laying eggs. I mean, how creepy can it get?
Especially if you're not big on bugs, you know, that could certainly turn you off to the whole subject.
Well, at least they're not spiders, Scott.
Don't go there.
I agree. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this is Diane in Carmichael, and I saw a pterodactyl-type creature when I was about, like, maybe 7 years old in San Jose, California.
Did anybody see it with you?
My father and my brother doesn't remember it. My father is deceased, but father was telling us to come in, and I was in a trance-like state when I saw it, and it seemed to be that my brother...
Still there?
Oops.
Well, we lost her right toward the end.
But the trance-like state she was about to mention was similar to one of those cases in Puerto Rico where the three school students were walking back home, went into this sort of slowing down of time for them as the pterodactyl appeared. So could it be some kind of time warp, some kind of maybe memory of something that was there at the site they happened to be transiting? Then again, more speculation.
Well, you know, Scott, though, I don't really understand how an interdimensional situation would work. I'm sometimes more of a practicalist. I mean, I believe that we've been visited, for example, by extraterrestrials, but I also believe that whatever this creature is, it's terrestrial, it's been here, whether it's an insect or a mammal or who knows what kind of a creature, that there's some of them running around the planet right now. Too many people are seeing these things. And it gets to a point where you know they're not making up the story.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, maybe we should that should be stressed, regardless of its provenance. It's here now, people are seeing it.
Wildcard Line, it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Wayne from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello, Wayne, go ahead.
Hey, George Scott.
Hi.
I had an experience back in 2001. I had a ranch in near Snowflake, Arizona. I had cattle, I had rabbits, chickens, goats. We had an experience one day, one of our goats was torn apart, and we thought it might have been one of the dogs that we had. We had six dogs with us. I walked outside of the house, and I was with my son at the time, and I looked over next to a tree, and I seen this thing was like 4 foot, 3 to 4 foot tall. And the first thing it reminded me of is Jurassic Park, of those little dinosaur things that ate
The Velociraptors.
Yes,
is that
exactly.
What they were? Yeah.
And it looked at me straight in the eye, and I sat there for a couple minutes trying to figure out what the hell is this thing. And my son saw it, too. We both stared at it for a couple minutes. He sort of got behind me, and we just stood there. And it was like... And the dogs were all around. They didn't even come near it.
Do you think it was a chupacabra?
I believe it's the only thing I could figure out. I've been trying to figure this out for years. I've been talking to people about it, doing research on the internet, and the only thing that comes close is the chupacabra.
There aren't a lot of creatures that people talk about on this planet that are beyond a chupacabra, Scott. So it could very well be one of those.
It certainly sounds like it. And it would be... another case in Arizona subsequent to the original wave back in 97.
Well, and as you say, it seems to be in these warm weather climate areas. And, of course, Arizona, Florida, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Brazil, all over the place. Indeed, this is where it's happening. Scott, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Appreciate
Absolutely.
You being on
Thank
Coast
you,
to Coast. You too. Wonderful guest. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next program, Austin, Texas, with Alex Jones as our guest. Until then, be safe, everyone.